Good morning.
Good morning.
The classes are here. So if you get a chance after services, be sure to say hi to them. I'm sure I don't have to tell you. So it's certainly a pleasure to see them. Katie, you missed a great week of camp and some strep throat. So, you know, take your pick. All right. If you will, let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. We are continuing our look. We've started last week with our look at the Sermon on the Mount. We started with the Beatitudes. And this week, we're going to look at something kind of interesting. Well, it should all be interesting anyway. Matthew chapter 5. Let's look at verses 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned?
It is then good for nothing, but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Both salt and light have some rather interesting properties. And one might ask, what is the connecting theme between these two? How do we connect the salt and the light for this particular lesson and this particular passage? Well, first off, Jesus compares his followers to both salt and light. But the question is, what does he mean by these things? Well, that's a very good question. I've got 2 points. The first one is the salt of the earth, and the second is the light of the world. The light of the world. So the salt of the earth. We use this phrase often to describe people of great worth and reliability. That person is the salt of the earth. You know, I really like that guy. Well, salt today is perhaps one of the cheapest spices that one could buy at the grocery store. You could buy one of those things for, what, less than a dollar, right? At least when I checked last, I haven't done grocery shopping by myself in a while. but that is, it's still one of the cheaper things that one could purchase. But it used to be very valuable and a prized resource. Even wars were fought over salt. If you recall your science classes in high school, perhaps in college, salt is an ionic compound. It is combining one part of sodium and one part of chlorine. And today it is used as a spice to bring out the flavor, people like to say. Well, but add a little salt to this. It'll bring out the flavor of this particular thing. But if you're not aware of this, it was used that way also in ancient times. We can see in Job chapter 6 and verse 6 that that flavor was brought out by salt. It can also be used as a preservative. Drying out meats to save them. You know, we have beef jerky. You wonder why beef jerky is very salty? Well, because it's used to preserve the meat to make sure that it continues on. At the end of the Third Punic War in 146 BC, Rome salted the soil around the town of Carthage in North Africa to keep them from growing crops. This was a punishment to keep them from continually attacking them. I mean, this is the third war that they've started here, or at least that they were engaged in. And so Rome said, all right, the third time, you're going to have this done to you so that you're not going to do this to us anymore. And in fact, something similar happened in Scripture in Judges chapter 9 and verse 45. Abimelech, the usurper, the son of Gideon, who decided he was going to be king of Israel. He decided to salt the soil of Shechem for turning against him at this time. But in Palestine, at the time of Jesus, salt was even used as a fertilizer. And you wonder, wait, hold on a second. It can be used as something to prevent crops from growing and something to help crops grow? Amazingly, yes. At that time, it was used as a fertilizer. The difference between the fertilizer, being used as a fertilizer, and being used as punishment is essentially the amount that's used. Salt, when properly used, can kill weeds while preserving the more deeply rooted crops. Too much, and it kills the crops as well. This is one of the reasons why some towns, I'm not sure if this is among them, but some towns use other compounds like calcium chloride in order to salt the roads. Because, you know, you get the salt on the roads to prevent prevent them from icing during the wintertime when it's about to snow. And some places, they don't want to use sodium chloride because then that could hurt the crops, that could hurt the vegetation. But things like calcium chloride don't, and perhaps a few other similar salt compounds. Salt can also make barren soil easier to till, and it helps the crops to absorb other vital nutrients. So, Jesus, I believe, is talking about salt's use as a fertilizer, not as punishment, not as a preservative necessarily, but as a fertilizer, because salt of the earth, salt in the soil. Another way of reading this particular passage, you are the salt of the soil. But if the salt becomes useless or foolish, how shall it be made useful? How shall it become salt again? It is then good for nothing, but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. So, salt can definitely lose its usefulness when it comes into contact with water. So what happens when salt comes into contact with water? It dissolves, right? It turns that fresh water into salt water. Well, what use does salt water have? It does have its uses. But for drinking purposes, not as much. Not as much. And you can't really use that for fertilizing either. Or for watering crops. The water, the salt becomes useless. And it's difficult to get back out of the water. Now you got to boil the water. But how are you going to boil the water when the water is in the soil? So you have all these different difficulties here. All right. So we do see that, those salt shakers that we see sometimes, there's often salt grains of rice in salt shakers sometimes. And part of the reason is so that the salt maintains its looseness. It doesn't absorb any water. It doesn't dissolve, so to speak. It doesn't clump up. It still is useful. The rice in there absorbs all the water that's around there in the atmosphere and helps to keep the salt loose and useful. Instead of being useful in the earth or soil, we might as well drop it on the road, being trampled underfoot by men. If something is underfoot by men, what use is it, except as a road? So where is our usefulness? Have we lost our saltiness? You see, our saltiness can be determined by how we grow. We are familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6, that I planted, talking about Paul. Paul planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. We plant the seed, we water, but we can also be the fertilizer, the salt of the soil, the salt of the earth. Fertilizers don't directly affect the crop, but they do help them receive the proper nutrients. Right? They help them to grow. They don't alter it in such a way that it becomes something else. They don't harm the crop in any way, but it does help it to get the proper nutrients it needs to grow big and strong. We too, in a similar way, can be the fertilizer to help Christians or to help the world have the gospel. We don't alter the message, just as the fertilizer doesn't alter the plant in any way. We don't alter the message, the gospel. We just help it flourish. We just help propagate it around as much as we can. We talk about it with other people, or at least we should. We have started this newspaper campaign, and we put that in the newspaper. We have other publications that we can have put out. We have our website. We try to fertilize that soil, till it up, make sure that it permeates throughout the area, just as a fertilizer ought to do, and help the seed grow. What do we do that might hinder the gospel, though? What could we do that might hinder the gospel so that we are now useless? Well, one example. Paul said that our speech always ought to be with grace, seasoned with salt, in Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Perhaps our speech is preventing us in some way of spreading the gospel, of fertilizing that soil. It should not just taste nice, our speech. It should also facilitate the growth of the gospel. Is it possible for our speech to betray us, for our speech to make it so that someone isn't as likely to obey the gospel of Christ? Well, yes, of course it is. So we need to do our best to keep our speech in check. It can be too much, however. The salt can be too much, which could lead to barren soil. When it comes to the gospel, we shouldn't be a bull in a china shop. That could turn people off to the gospel. Now, in time past, the fire and brimstone preachers were very popular, and people loved to hear those kinds of messages. Well, I assume they did. I didn't live in that time. But they were very popular. There were a lot of preachers like that. Not so much these days. And one of the reasons is because that turns people off to the gospel. We don't need to be a bull in a china shop. We don't need to be... there are some people... You might be in a Bible study with somebody. One thing you might not need to do is start spouting verse after verse after verse after verse after verse without even giving them a chance to speak. You do that, and they are less likely to want to respond. It's like, okay, guy, I see what you're doing. We got to be able to have a conversation with people. Spouting off verse after verse is not going to be something that they are likely to respond to. We can't offer too much salt. We have to have just the right amount so that the soil is fertilized but not destroyed. Next, the light of the world. Verses 14 through 16. Salt was very valuable, still is, though it doesn't cost a lot in the supermarket. Light is very valuable too. Otherwise, we wouldn't spend so much money trying to keep the lights on at night. Light is very valuable for us. God created light on the first day of creation in Genesis chapter 1. On day 4, he created the greater light, the sun, to rule the day, and the lesser light, the moon, to rule the night. Light is often a figure that is used for illuminating the proper path spiritually. We can see this in Psalm 119, verse 105. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. It helps me, guides me, directs me where I need to go. Jesus himself is described. He says he is the light of the world in John 8, 12. John, throughout his writings, in fact, describes Jesus as the light. So the question is, if Christ and his word are the light, how are we supposed to be the light of the world? Well, that's an interesting question, and certainly good for the application of this concept and how this works here in this particular passage. As with the salt being the fertilizer, we carry Christ and his word with us. The source of the light is that us? Are we the source of that light? Certainly not. The source of the light is Christ. The lesser light reflects the light of the greater light. We see, and if you took a basic astronomy course, or you will know that the moon doesn't generate its own light. It doesn't. That's why sometimes you see half of it, sometimes you see a part of it, sometimes you see a good chunk of it, but not the whole thing. It reflects the light, the greater light. It reflects the light of the sun. So we are to reflect the light of the S-O-N, just as the moon reflects the light of the S-U-N. The moon reflects the light of the sun, just as we ought to reflect the light of the sun. That's how that works. And I love the song that we sing sometimes, "Let the lower lights be burning." We are those lower lights that we need to shine to everybody. We might save someone in that way. Some other things about light that are very interesting. You see, light permeates, just as salt, and when you're fertilizing the soil, light permeates. It is very difficult to go somewhere in this world that is completely pitch black. Have you thought about that? No photons, no light particles whatsoever. It's very difficult to find a place on Earth like that. We have to go far and wide to find a place like that. I mean, even in your house, when there's no moon out at night and you turn out all the lights, there's still something there. It might be hard to detect, but there's something there. Something might feel pitch black, but in fact it is not. Light somehow finds a way into these places. But it is absent in certain places, such as caves and the depths of the sea. In fact, in some caves, at least that's what the tour guide says, some animals become blind if they get trapped in the cave somehow and they can't find their way out. They become blind and they can't see anymore. In fact, those same tour guides will say that if you get trapped down there for a certain amount of time that you will go blind as well. I tried to look up some, that's why I say the tour guide say this. I tried to look up some confirmation of this, but I couldn't. Maybe you can find it, maybe you know, I don't know. But without that light, that's certainly an interesting comparison. If we are completely without that light for an extended period, how difficult will it be for us to recognize it when we see it again? Will we then be blinded to it? I think that's what a lot of this world is like. They have become blinded to the light. And they can't recognize it when it's shining right in their face. That's a sad thing. That is a sad thing. It's also absent in the depths of the sea. A little over 3,000 feet under the surface of the ocean, light does not penetrate at all. Yet even in these dark depths, you know, God has a wonderful creation. Even in these dark depths, you have some fish and some other creatures that even produce their own light. Now that's amazing, isn't it? Producing their own light. God's creation is wonderful and amazing. And even when it is dark and we can't see anything, some invisible forms of light still exist. You're like, well, invisible light? What are you talking about? We generate heat, don't we? Don't we feel warm sometimes? On Wednesday, I felt very warm. I had a temperature of 103. Well, that kind of heat is a form of light, in fact. And that's a form of light that we call infrared. So we can generate that light in that way. There's another kind of light that it can be very harmful to us, and that's ultraviolet. It's invisible to us, and yet it still can permeate certain parts of the atmosphere so that we get sunburned. And sometimes get worse conditions. But thankfully, the atmosphere blocks out the worst of it. Otherwise, we'd die instantly. So we need to permeate this world in all forms and not let it be hidden like that city that is set on a hill. You know, sometimes I like the illustration that Jesus uses here. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. You have light. Where do you put your light? In a room. Do you put your light on the floor? I mean, I guess you could. But that light will have to shine up in order for it to do any good. Typically, we have our lights high up in some way. We have ceiling fans. We have light fixtures up here. I mean, in this building, they're certainly up high. So that it illuminates from above. So that we can see things. Can't be hidden. It cannot be hidden that high up. Light also illuminates. It permeates, it illuminates. Anything that you see, anything, is the reflection of light bouncing off of that thing. You look at your spouse in the face. That's light from somewhere else bouncing off of her face, his face, and coming back into your eyes. And certain particles of light determine the color, and perhaps she has a beauty mark somewhere. These kinds of things are indicative of light around us. We don't see someone's face, we see the light that reflects off of that face, that bounces off of that face. This light helps us to see and navigate a path. When I was in St. Thomas for about a month doing some work, I decided to take around this time of year, in fact, I decided to take a little bit of time to go to the small island of St. John there, and it's nearby, and I took a little ferry over there, and they had a state park on that particular island. And I decided to go looking around, going around the path, do a little bit of hiking. I thought it would be fun. Hadn't really had a chance to do that since I'd been there, and I was almost done with my time there, and it was about the 4th of July. In fact, it was the 4th of July, and they had a fireworks show, and that was pretty neat. I found this particular spot on this path that was a great outlook into the bay where they were going to have the fireworks display. And I thought, well, that's fantastic. I'll look around a little bit more, and when it starts getting dark, I'll come back here. Started getting darker, darker. I realized in my bag that I brought with me, I had snacks. I had things like that. I had no flashlight. Now, if you know anything about that island, there's not a whole lot of light on that island. And I thought, you know what, I think I'll be okay. There's probably going to be enough ambient light somewhere that I'll be able to navigate my way. Well, there wasn't. Thankfully, there was a family who had staked that spot out the year prior and had decided that they were going to come and visit that spot. And I talked with them, and we enjoyed the fireworks together. And as I was about to leave, they decided, hey, do you happen to have a flashlight? And I'm like, no, in fact, I don't. Here's this little keychain LED light that you can use. And I'm like, okay, who am I going to argue, right? So I take that thing, and I go like this to find every little root that had come up, every little crag in the rock. I don't know if you realize how treacherous that path was. There were roots everywhere. There were hills. Not only that, there was a steep cliffside that would have had me drop into the ocean if I went the wrong way. There were cactuses everywhere. And it's possible that instead of landing in the ocean, I could have landed on a cactus. So I was very grateful for that light. It didn't go very far, and it didn't illuminate much, but it was enough for me to be able to get back down to the bay, back to the ferry. Light illuminates. Light is helpful. Light lights the path so that we can know where to go, so they don't fall off the path and end up possibly hurting ourselves very badly. So I thank God for that family that was there to help me with that light. When we're driving in our cars, if we turn off our headlights, you think it might be kind of difficult to drive at night. I mean, with a full moon, you might be able to see some things, but even then, you have shadows from the trees, and who knows if there's a deer going to walk out in front of you. You want to have those headlights on to be sure about this. We have to let our light shine before men. That light that reflects the sun, the S-O-N. And this could be done in verse 16 by doing good works, because Christ did good works. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. Don't let your good works glorify you. Well, that's an easy thing to do, isn't it? That's an easy thing to say. It's an easy thing to say. Oh, I've done these great works. Glorify me. Thank you so much for the compliment that you have given to me for doing all these wonderful things. Don't let that happen. Don't let it get to your head. Say, all glory to the Father, or something to that effect. Let them know that, or at the very least, let yourself know that what you do is not to glorify yourself, but to glorify God, the one who created you, the one who saved you, the one who loves you so much. Let us glorify him with our good works. Let us point to him. It illuminates the way, the truth, and the life. Just as Jesus is. Jesus calls himself this in John 14:6. He is the way. He illuminates himself, of course. Reflect the light that he gives and point it in his direction. You see, our Lord calls us to be salt and light. Our salt helps the seed of the word grow in people's hearts if we're doing it properly. Our light reflected from the sun is manifest in good works that glorify God. Both of these things should lead people to Christ. Let us be more evangelistic in our everyday lives. I know we've talked about that a lot in the last few months, but I think this is a good passage that talks about that as well. Let us glorify God in all that we do. Let us be the fertilizer that shows people, that show people the right way, that help that helps that seed to grow. Let us do good to all men, especially to those of the household of faith, as we have opportunity. Galatians 6, 9 and 10. I pray that you've seen God glorified this morning. I pray that you've seen him glorified in our worship, by our singing, by our prayers, by partaking of the Lord's Supper, and all the acts of worship that we have here today. I pray that he's been glorified in the words that you've heard as well. I pray that you, as you leave here, will glorify him in the deeds that you do. Let us point people to Christ. I pray that these words have pointed you to Christ as well. And that if you need to obey him, if you need to, well, we all need to obey him. But if you need to obey him in baptism, if you need to obey him, obey the gospel, you have a chance to do that today. You have a chance to put him on in baptism and to become a Christian. If you've already done that, you have a chance to make things right with him as well. Let us be the salt of the earth, the salt of the soil, the fertilizer that helps that seed grow. Let us also be the light of the world that points people, that reflects the light of Christ and points people in his direction through our good works. If you have any this morning, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.